Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today we're going to talk to Lisa Bex, who is a colleague, a friend that I've known quite some time. And I think you are going to really love her story. I highly recommend that you get out in nature and go for a walk as you listen, or sit down with a cup of tea. And Lisa really has me thinking about why we're doing this Season 8 of storytelling. Storytelling about the depths of the human experience and how it relates to yoga therapy, yoga, Ayurveda, the healing that happens when we connect deeply with ourselves. And when I really think about why we decided to take an entire year to hear the stories of people in our community, I think it's because I've realized, and I'm sorry to say this out loud, I hope it doesn't hurt anyone's feelings, but I feel like we're lost. The yoga therapy, and Ayurveda community seems lost. And I want to get back to what's important, what touched all of us so deeply, to help us understand the roots of where this all came from, how we connected with it, how it shifted us from a deep internal state. Because I think if we can get back in touch with that, we will know what our next steps are in the future of yoga, yoga therapy, and Ayurveda. I'm not sure why we got lost in the wilderness, if you will. I mean, I have some ideas that I'm sure some of you do too, and I really don't want to focus on that. But when I hear a story like Lisa has to share today, I get it again. I realize, oh, that's it. That's the thing. That's why we're here. So I don't want to tell you too much. I want her beautiful story to unfold. But maybe by the end of the podcast, you could check in with yourself and see if there's something inside of you. This podcast helps you to remember the roots of why you're here, why you do this practice, and why it matters. So let us go meet Lisa Bex. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm Amy Wheeler, your host. Are you needing to earn some continuing education units? Well, we have the exact thing for you. Every single Monday night, we have a Monday night clinic where we practice postures, breathing, and meditation towards a very specific theme of the month. And then we stay afterwards and we talk about the theory of why we chose what we did for that particular practice. We give you a completion certificate, which you can turn into your continuing education body. And we're growing all the time. We have a wonderful community. You can do this live with us online, or you can do it through a recording. Go to www.theoptimalstate.com and check out the Monday Night Clinic, and we would love to see you there. Welcome, Lisa. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Amy. I'm excited to talk to you.
Great. Lisa, I always like to let our guests know where we are. So I'm outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Where are you?
I'm just south of San Francisco in the Bay Area.
Wonderful. Ah, I can't wait to hear your story. As you know, the whole season 8, the entire year, is all about storytelling and really witnessing people in their storytelling. I feel like we're getting an internal view of all the people who have so generously offered to tell their story, like what happened, what was going on inside of you. To me, it's a really kind of a sacred or precious conversation that we're having. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm kind of nervous and I'm kind of shy, but I thought when I saw this opportunity, I feel like yoga has just been so powerful in my life that I should share it. So
to benefit others, yeah, who might not know that it's sitting out here waiting.
Yep, definitely.
Well, let's jump in. Let's start with, where were you before yoga? What was going on in your life? How are you feeling? Do you remember back to that time?
Yeah, basically I found yoga in my early 20s in college, at the end of college. During that time, it was a very intense time in my life. My mom had passed away unexpectedly in my senior year of high school. So I was in a very deep time of grief. And at the same time, I was a young adult trying to be a young adult and figure out who I am and be independent in the world. And I just happened to be walking on the street that I would always walk down from my apartment to the campus. And there was a Zen center, like a Buddhist temple. And I remember seeing this sign for a yoga class. I was at the University of Michigan, and this was in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It was in the 90s, and I feel like yoga wasn't so known then, especially in Michigan, maybe more in California. So I kept seeing this sign for this little yoga class that the Buddhist center was putting on, and I just decided to sign up for it. I so vividly remember it because it was some movement, very gentle, and then a lot of like breathing practices and meditation. And I just remember leaving there like a spaghetti noodle, basically
In a good way.
relaxed. Yes, like so relaxed. And I was blown away by how powerful it was. And, now knowing what I know about yoga from all the studies that I've done and everything, I was like, wow, that was like a major sort of downregulation of my nervous system that happened.
I love, a downregulation of my nervous system. It's such a simple phrase, but it is the thing that hooks almost every yogi person I know. That is the feeling. They take the class a few times and they're like, what is this amazing natural drug with no side effects? Like, it does have side
Yeah.
effects, and then you get to know yourself better. But just to say, like, that downregulation of the nervous system, that is the hook, I think.
Yeah. And of course, at that time, I didn't have that language or that understanding, but I just knew, like, wow, that was amazing. And I wanted to continue doing this. And so it was like a finite series, right? So when it ended, and they didn't do them all the time, I went on a search for other ways to do yoga. And I found this collective called Inward Bound. So it was like a collective of teachers, and they taught in the basement of a Quaker center on the campus. And I met probably the most important teacher of all of my yoga experience, Barbara Linderman. And there's a little side story about Barbara that I have to
Let's go there.
tell, but I'll just tell a little bit about the yoga first and then I'll tell the
Okay.
side story. But
Can I just say this is a wandering podcast? We have
perfect.
no goal.
That works. And her classes were very different than the ones at the Buddhist Center. And she taught a class called Postures to Sacred Music. And the amazing thing about it was that she didn't talk. She just did the practice, and we did the practice with her. Like she wasn't calling out the practice as, happens in modern classes. But this practice was a little more physically demanding, but the same sort of feeling of like there's something more than just these physical movements going on here. And to me, at that point, it almost felt mystical, although the environment wasn't like a woo-woo environment at all. It was just like we arrive. It was all these kind of just all different people, regular people coming to this practice that just drawing us all back again and again. And Barbara, she was like this very quiet, humble person, but she just had this presence that was like it was yoga. I mean, and you could just tell. She was so humble. She never said much, but she didn't have to. Occasionally, I would see her like at the library with her grandchildren, in town. And you just could see this woman just exuded calm and peacefulness and kindness. And, I really needed that in my life. And it's so interesting because at that time, I knew that I really liked her and she was part of the reason that I was going. But I had no idea that 30 years later, I would still think about her on a regular basis. And In 2006, at that point, I was living in Pennsylvania. A lot of things had changed in my life. And I found out that she had passed away, which, was quite upsetting to me. And I read this kind of like a memorial about her. And what I learned, kind of jumping from time to time in the course of my life in yoga, was that she actually was a student of Krishnamacharya.
What?
Yes,
I
a
did not see that
direct
coming. I
student
did
of
not see that coming.
Krishnamacharya. Yeah, in the
I thought you were going to tell me
1950s.
she was like a famous artist or
No,
like I did
no.
not see that one coming. Oh my
She
goodness.
was a direct student of Krishnamacharya in the 1950s. Her husband was an academic, a historian. They were living in India and he was studying there. And she was part of some, women's group that was invited into the Krishnamacharya home for yoga classes,
That
which is,
is just mind blowing.
it's mind blowing. Yes.
Can I say something about this? Because to me, this is such an important detail. Like, what are we really doing? What are we doing in yoga? Are we cultivating the kind, calm human that cares most about bringing their grandchildren to the library? Is that what our yoga practice is doing for us? I mean, I just have to say that.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think for me, I'll kind of go into more of the timeline and everything of my practice and the different benefits that I've gotten from it, but I would say yes.
I don't know about anybody else listening, but this podcast and unfolding things like this just tickles me. If you can't hear it, I'm smiling ear to ear. Let's go.
Yeah. So, for years, I was going to the classes there. Obviously, again, there was a lot for me going on, and I feel like this place was comforting. It was nurturing. Again, I was young and I wasn't like evaluating it. And I never went to yoga to like go on a spiritual journey. That was never like my intention. But I just went and it made me feel good. And I didn't analyze it too much, at the time.
That's what all my college students told me. At the end of the semester, I'd say, why did you keep coming back? What did you like? We felt better. I felt good. It's just that. So simple.
Then at that point, when I finished college and I had been working for some years in Michigan, I was working as a clinical social worker. I then got engaged and I moved to the Bay Area. And as I've moved in my life, whenever I move, I find my yoga, like, okay, now I'm here. I want to continue my practice. And so I started practicing with an Ashtanga teacher. That's obviously a very intense physical practice. At that time in my life, I was young, I was strong, and it felt good. It made sense.
And haven't you been like a runner or an athlete of some sort in your life also?
Yeah. So I was a gymnast as a
Okay.
child all my life. I think that coming to these movements where, they felt very familiar, I would say. And yeah, I was a runner too. I was doing that practice for a few years. And then I got pregnant. My husband and I moved to the East Coast. Basically, a few months after we moved there, I had my daughter. And we were in a place where we didn't really know anybody. It was just a time of being a little bit disconnected and a little bit isolated. And I found a yoga studio there, and we lived there for 5 years. And 3 years later, I had my son while we were still there. And during that time, of just very intense parenting of, babies and toddlers, my one non-negotiable thing was my Sunday morning yoga class. I have to go to my Sunday morning yoga class because I'm a better person if I go and have that time of self-care. So it was really interesting because it really changed to self-care, I think, in that time of being a young mom.
Can I ask you,
Yeah.
the moms I talk to, when you're doing that kind of intense caretaking and all of your focus is on making sure these little beings are not just alive, but thriving, it's easy to forget who you are. Do you feel like that Sunday morning class helped you remember that you actually were a being separate from them also?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think in the wider scope of all of the practice, that is one of the biggest benefits, is that you're coming to yourself. You know, one of my Ayurveda teachers said about Ayurveda, but I would say it about yoga, it continues to introduce you to yourself.
Yeah.
And the longer you practice, potentially on deeper and deeper levels.
Yeah. And this arc of your life that you're sharing with us so graciously, that's what I'm getting so far is like in all these different stages, places, you've got that little thread of yoga helping you through.
Yeah, and I think that is, it's almost like an old friend, right? That you just keep coming back to. And the other thing that is so amazing about it is that it evolves as you need it to. I mean, when I was young and I was single and I was doing a strong practice and I was getting a certain benefit from that, and then I became a mom and I really needed self-care, and then it became a form of self-care. But underlying it all is this continued connection with yourself and learning about yourself. That was the next thing that I wanted to say, is that parenting, the idea of observation, of self-observation in yoga, really was helpful in parenting. So, like, for example, in the challenges of parenting, sometimes, like, I would yell at my kids. Then I would walk away and I would be like, I'm a terrible person. I'm never going to do that again. And like, there would be so much sort of,
Like
you
shame
know,
or something.
shame. Yes.
Yeah.
And so I started employing sort of that observation from yoga practice. Like, after that would happen, like if I would yell at my kids, I would just observe what was going on in my body and this sort of intensity in my nervous system, essentially. Also, I can extend it out to them. I can observe the expression on their face, their body language after I yell at them. And just through the observation, I didn't have to say, like, oh, you're a bad person to myself. I just felt it. I saw it. And that alone was enough to change. Like, I don't want to yell at my kids anymore. I don't have to be mad at myself for doing it. Just observing, feeling that sensation, observing that in them was enough to change. And I think that sometimes it seems oversimplified, maybe, but I've found this so much in so many situations in my life, is just observing yourself can be the answer, because all of a sudden you start seeing your patterns. You also connect with what is going on inside of me that leads to these patterns. And it's so powerful to just understand yourself. And it almost like takes care of itself after that. I don't know. It's hard to explain exactly.
I have been thinking about this so much, this idea of self-awareness that we all have these hard things that happen. We all react. We all take action and speak in different ways. But yoga helps us to step back and be almost like an observer of that. And suddenly it's not about the thing that happened. It's about, whoa, I don't really like feeling the way I felt just now. Is there anything I can do to feel differently next time this happens? It's not even about I need to do better or be better. It's I don't like that feeling inside.
Yeah, exactly. I have noticed, this is part of something that I teach when I teach yoga classes, is this idea that you can do a yoga pose and then you come out of it and you just are still, and you observe sort of the reverberations of what you've just done in your body, how it affects your breathing, on your mind. And in my opinion, in my experience, that is true of every single thing we do, every word we speak, every action or interaction that we have. It creates some kind of reverberation inside us, and if we're interacting with somebody else, in them too. That is just such a powerful thing that you can experience through yoga and then transition that to basically everything you do in life.
I just want to point out that you're a very self-aware human being to even realize that even your thoughts are having reverberations inside of you and probably externally too. But like that's a very deep place. And I'm wondering if you came into the world that way, do you think? Or do you think starting yoga at such an early age kind of helped cultivate this self-awareness?
No, I definitely did not come into the world with this. No. No, I really do think it's the practice. Coming back to it again and again, continuing to understand it from a really personal perspective, and also having good teachers. I've also studied yoga philosophy, just had excellent teachers, but I do think the personal part of it is key. I think you can have great teachers, but that you really have to take it into your own hands in some senses and work with it to make your discoveries. And, you know, somebody else's discoveries might be different than mine, but they're theirs. They're what they need to discover from it.
My name is Amy Wheeler. I'm the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour, but also the creator of a mobile app that's based on the gunas of yoga and Ayurveda. It's the first of a kind, and we'd love for you to try it for free. The app is called The Optimal State, and it tracks the state of your gunas, and then it gives you therapeutic interventions. Now we're starting to add Dharma talks as well as Yoga Nidra. And we think these are wonderful ways that you can do some self-care and take care of yourself on a regular basis. So come join us, the Optimal State app. We'd love to see you over there too. Can I ask you a very subtle question? I think
Sure.
about these things so much. Is there a difference between, I heard we're supposed to transform in yoga, I heard we're supposed to do self-reflection, I'm supposed to kind of internally assess my yamas and niyamas and kleshas. Is there a difference between that kind of I shoulda, woulda, coulda, this is what they're telling me to do, versus this organic inclination to see the word ahimsa, to really feel like, whoa, I kind of want to understand that more deeply. And then to spend a few months like watching all the ways that we hurt ourselves and others. Oh, I think that's what that's about. Like, I don't know, that seems subtle, but for me,
Yeah.
it's like almost like the rules of the church, and I put that in air quotes, versus seeking from the inside out and wanting to experientially understand the teaching of ahimsa or nonviolence. Am I making sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is helpful to have the sort of theory to some degree, like being sort of the expert of your own experience. There are certain parts of the theory that are going to speak to you more than others, and that maybe those are the ones that you need, you know, like the concept of svadhyaya, like self-study. That one was just like, yes, that seems like something I understand from the physical practice, and I can carry it into my thinking patterns, my behavior patterns, my interactions, my daily life. So, yeah, I mean, I think that some theory can be helpful. In another sense, I don't think it's necessary. When you have this embodied experience of the practice and it brings you to a place where you really feel at peace or focused or clear, and then you continue to come to the practice again and again, you have the practical, which is like the physical practice, and then you have the spiritual over here. And then there's this like line in between that's like the tuning in. And for me now, after so many years of doing it, if I just do a physical practice, it just automatically shifts my mind to that place of like a spiritual feeling. It gives me a spiritual feeling and a like a grounded feeling and a like a connection with myself. Like, oh, I'm back home.
Which totally reminds me of what you said about the Zen Center and your beautiful teacher. You kept coming home to yourself and to the practice, and now even though you're not at the Zen Center and your teacher is no longer here, when you get on your mat and do these physical postures and breath work, oh, I'm home again in a spiritual sense.
Mm-hmm. Before I had like formal training as a teacher and things like that, I think because yoga made me feel so good, I was going out buying books at the library and reading, and, you know, because it was like, this is, I just want more of this. At the time, I wouldn't have called it this, but as I look back on it, it was like self-healing.
Yeah. I call it like goodness. Like it's just benevolent and good, and purity gets a little bit kind of rubs me the wrong way, but there is to keep coming back and discovering that goodness inside of us, between us. I don't know, that kind of encompasses why I like to keep coming back.
I agree. Yeah, it is. It's like a place of, right, purity is not the right word. Like, it's very wholesome.
Wholesome. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So just to keep going on my journey, because there's certain things I think it's important to tell about. And then in 2015, when I was 44, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. That was deep healing, and that was conscious healing. Like, I need this to help me through this process, both mentally and physically. So during that time, I went through a lot of treatment. You know, I had a surgery, I had chemo, I had radiation. At the end of it all, you know, like physically, my body was wrecked. I couldn't even walk my kids a half a mile to school. I had so much pain. And I happened to hear a podcast with Kate Holcomb. And, you know, and I was like, I have to go to this woman because nobody could help me. I mean, they sent me to physical therapists and they were like, well, you know, just don't do anything and don't do yoga. You know, don't
whatever you do, do not do yoga. God forbid.
It's like, oh gosh, oh, they don't know me. And so anyway, I found Kate. I heard the podcast. I was like, I have to go to this person. Like, her story is.
And did you know that she was associated with Krishnamacharya?
No.
Yoga? Oh,
no.
My gosh.
So this all, like, so many years later, this all just came together. You know, Barbara, yeah. Kate, Optimal State. It was like, wow, it was all like predestined, basically.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So,
and for those of you that don't know Kate, she doesn't promote herself. She's, you know, mainly a mom and does some beautiful teaching also. But she's like the American daughter of TKV Desikachar, like that close to the family, even to this day, very, very connected to the Desikachar family in Menica. And a lot of people don't know about Kate because she's stayed very quiet. She hasn't gone out and promoted herself.
And she's amazing.
Amazing.
Yes. So I contacted her. You know, it took a few times trying to get a hold of her. Finally, I got to go see her. And she made a practice for me. This is actually a really critical part of what yoga has done for me, too, is she said, you can do it whenever you can do it. If you have to break it up, you know, do part of it in the morning, part of it at night, but you just do it. Do it and be consistent with it, you know, because the consistency is really important. It was like this message that I needed because, you know, again, like revealing some of my not so good sides, I was definitely a perfectionist of like, you know, oh, I have to do it this way and this time. And and I think that between, you know, sort of where I had ended up in this situation with cancer and being very depleted, I had to learn how to give myself a break. Yeah. And then, you know, with the practice, it was really like an oasis of healing for me. I was so glad every time I went to it, every day, it was like, I know this is healing me. And it did. It actually did.
Was it simple or complex?
It was simple. It was simple. Physically, some of it was focused on sort of, you know, getting rid of tightness and pain. But then the breathing was definitely, very much regulating for the nervous system. Yes, it was very simple. I think that it created what I kind of describe as a gentle discipline. It was like, I need to do this, but I'm not going to go at it with such, intensity. Like, this is a kind practice. This is a gentle practice. This is a healing practice. In its gentleness, it was so powerful.
I can relate. I've been given so many of those practices that if you look at it on the paper, it literally doesn't look like much. You're just like, what could that do? But when you feel it and it's integrating gentle postures with breath and maybe a little chanting or a visualization or like somehow that weaving together with exactly what you need is just so powerfully healing.
That was a huge part of my healing process. And that whole process in general, having that diagnosis, going through all that treatment, it was really like a time of learning how to give myself grace, realizing that you don't have to do so much. Like, everything will be okay, even if you don't get your to-do list done. And my yoga practice just followed what I needed. There were days, especially before I met Kate and when I was in the throes of the treatment and the chemo, I'd just be on my mat in child's pose. Being on my mat was like, okay, I'm taking care of myself. All I can do is this. Or, actually, it really helped me develop more of my meditation practice because movement was challenging sometimes. Again, it was just another evolution of how the practice took care of me where I was at that point in my life.
I'm just getting this vision of, I think you already said it, it's an old friend that just keeps coming back and reimagining how to support you and love you and care for you and be your oasis, you know? Hello, yoga, old friend, you know that? Those are the words that come.
It really did. And the practices that Kate gave me were healing. And I'm not sure like how I would have gotten out of that state that I was in without them.
I've known you for a long time, but I've never heard this story. And I think it's so interesting that you had gone through that. And then I met you, and then I went through something similar, you know, like it. And we're all going to have life catch up with us at some point in some way. You know, I think everyone listening can relate to that. Might not be a cancer diagnosis, but there's going to be something that you don't know what to do, where to turn, how to get out of it, much less heal yourself. Thank goodness we found yoga as that old friend.
And also, another part of this is that I became a yoga teacher, and teaching is also a very healing practice. Like, because you share something with other people and seeing them, experience the benefits of yoga is so rewarding. And being able to share that, it's also a life-changing practice too.
You hear the words coming out of your mouth, and you're like, oh, yeah, I need to remember that. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. So many people say that they go into teaching a class and they're just a mess, and they come out and they're like human again.
It's really cool. And I have some people that I've been working with for a long time. And, I remember you talking about this in the optimal state training is just that relationship. It's so powerful. And watching their process unravel in terms of like, starting with just the basics or starting where they are and with what they need and letting it be a collaborative, okay, I know some tools, you know yourself, you know what you need. Like, how can we work together to create something that helps you? And And just seeing the natural progression of how the students will then, kind of want something more or start to see yoga in more than, like, oh, this pose or what, you know what I mean? Like you see their own evolution and it's really cool.
It is. When they start to understand the therapeutic relationship around yoga, after a couple of years, they come in, they know what's going to happen. There's going to be a little assessment, and then we're going to co-create something for them. And then, like they understand the process and they start coming in like, oh, I'd like to work on this, or this is
Yes.
how I'm not feeling my best in this way. Could we build a practice around that? Do you know any chants that might address that? What do you think? Should I be doing this or that? It really does become that co-creation together.
Yeah. And it's really heartwarming to see, like, I tried this and that was really helpful. It's cool.
You and I were talking before the podcast. I said, yoga therapy is the thing I've tried to quit and I can't quit it. But that is why, because when a student comes and they light up and something has shifted and life is easier, like I can't quit that. As much as this is a challenging career path, that connection and that ability to help people feel better more of the time, it's powerful.
Yeah, and I think the cool thing about yoga too is that the effects are they're subtle and they happen over time. And even though they're subtle, they're very powerful. And at the same time, there's a certain evolution that happens if you stay with it over time. But there's also just immediate benefits right when you do the practice, right when you take a class. You get both like long-term benefits and immediate benefits. And so, like, I think, just sharing this, like, I've had a journey. And, like, I think for people who maybe are at the beginning, just going to the class, just go to the class, find a teacher that you connect with, and just absorb, the benefits of each class without worrying about, the long-term trajectory. And I feel like it just takes care of itself. It'll take care of itself if you keep showing up,
Love this. It feels to me like you're saying, go feel better if you can, without a lot of expectations, without a lot of story, without some plan to become a teacher trainer and make a living. Like all, and I've seen it over and over. That whole thing takes us away from that connection with our deeper self that we've been talking about all day today. That old friend, as soon as we start layering on the business and the money and the, I got to do this and I need another that, and here's all the famous people I studied with, like it actually takes us away from this beautiful, subtle thing.
I remember I took this workshop with this teacher. He said two things at the beginning of the workshop that I've not forgotten, and it was a lot of years ago. And one of them was the sincerity that you bring to the practice will determine the benefits of the practice. That's beautiful. And also that you can't jump ahead, that you have to start where you are and follow the progression, which I don't know what the progression is, but if you try to jump too far ahead, and maybe in the sense what I'm saying is like making it something bigger than the one class at a time, that it can become confusing or frustrating or maybe not really making sense. And that just following the natural progression of how it speaks to you and the rest will take care of itself.
When I hear you say that, I just think of the idea of let's not cognitively go forward and decide what the next step, next step, next step. Let's just shut all that down and let's just feel into this moment and feel our own body in this moment and do that as often as you can, over and over and over. And that's it. That's full stop.
I think that's really what it boils down to. It feeds into itself, right? Just being there, being present, just absorbing that experience each time. And It works its way into you. It starts working its way into your life.
What happens then? Because not that we're trying to get ahead cognitively or make promises or get people's expectations up, but I think.
No, I don't want to do that.
But it's interesting that if you come home to self on a regular basis, like, why would somebody want to do that? What are the potentials? What comes to my mind is I actually get to feel better in my life throughout my day and be nicer to my husband and feel love for my kitties every precious little moment and feel a sense of peace inside. Like, to me, those are the tangible things that come out of meeting myself on a regular basis.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's exactly that. It's deep and it's also practical. Just that when you connect with yourself, you're clearer. You're more focused. You're able to interact with other people with more compassion because you've extended compassion to yourself. You're more at peace. Your nervous system is more regulated, and you can go out into the world, just a better person. And I do think that yoga has made me a better person over and over again. Like I still make mistakes, but I feel like you have that ability then to come back to yourself, not overthink, just recentering. And like in my classes, when we practice, I come back to mountain pose, Tadasana, again and again. It's recentering. It's a physical representation of the internal work of life, like going out into the world, doing what you do, and then coming back, recentering so that you are clear and kind and focused and compassionate and all the things that, I think come from that connection with yourself, taking care of yourself, allowing you to be present.
I think about this a lot when I see like a young pop star and how much attention is going outward and how many people are trying to get near them for that power and that money and that fame. And I just think, oh, I wish, it's just one example. It could be any kid, any adult. I wish they had found yoga so that at the end of the day, when all that noise goes away and they're lying in their bed at night, they had a way to come home to themselves.
Yeah, that's really what it is. It's coming home to yourself. It's funny because people always say, "Oh, you're a yoga teacher. Oh, do your kids do yoga?" I'm like, "No, they don't."
No, not
No,
maybe not the asana,
no,
but
they
I
don't.
bet they're doing yogic. They're not calling it yoga, but Lisa, in living with you, in being with you, in interacting with you, couldn't you say that they are shaped by yoga and are doing the yoga?
I think so. Yes, because they are people who are, they reflect on life and they're wise, like they're wise for their age. And my daughter, she went to a yoga class with her friends at college, and she called me and said, "Mom, I went to a yoga class." I said, "Oh, that's wonderful." And she said, "I just felt so good." And it was like, wow. But I always thought, hopefully they'll find it someday, But you're right. I mean, it doesn't have to be a practice where you go to a place. It doesn't even have to be postures. It can mostly be a way of thinking and living and being. And, like over the years, my kids have made jokes like, "That's so not yoga." Like if I do
Calling you out.
something, if I do something uncool, they'll be like, "Mom, that's so not yoga."
Oh
I'm
my
like,
gosh.
"Yeah, you're right."
Lisa, I want to say something because I feel emotional about it, and I'm sure you've reflected on this, and we can cut it if you don't want to talk about it, but at the end of this interview, we're talking about the mom that you're being to your kids as they emerge into the world from high school into college. And at the beginning, you started with you found yoga when your mom passed away and you didn't have her. Do you think about that or not?
Yeah, I do, of course. I mean, that's why I talked about parenting, I think, and how yoga really helped me in terms of being a better parent and how it was a non-negotiable that I had to do because obviously losing a parent is deeply difficult thing to deal with. And I think then going into parenting without that support, of course, is very challenging. And I think that, having my practice really helped me. Again, I think that there's long-term grieving with losing a parent, probably at any age. I think at my age, it was kind of a critical time too, because I was trying to become an adult and be independent. And I'm not doing a very good job of describing this, but I think, yes, of course, I think that losing my mom definitely added additional challenges to being a parent. At the same time, it also gives me the preciousness of being here for my kids and giving them something that I lost.
I sense that deeply from you, even as we had spoken of in the beginning, that next few years you want to focus on your kids and be there.
Yeah. And I feel like the practice helped me be a better parent and helped me be there for them in a way that I wanted to be, in the way that, not to go back too much, but there were a lot of issues with my mom even before her death, complicated relationship issues. So I think that even that, I wanted to be a different mom for my kids.
It sounds like yoga has been your confidant
Yeah.
this whole time.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, there have been people in my life. I have a sister and we are so close and we're extremely supportive of each other and very bonded and, talk every day and help each
Wow, that's a
other
gift.
out too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, yoga has definitely helped me be the person, be the mom that I wanted to be.
Thank you for sharing your story with us. There are so many beautiful things from the very subtle way that you could articulate what you were feeling inside to the surprises of what emerged over the years. Is there anything you want to share with our audience? Do you accept private clients right now? Are you taking a break from business at this time?
I don't do business promotion, but I do accept private clients. If people seek me out, I'm happy to work with them.
Well, thank you, Lisa, for sharing your journey with us. And these conversations to me are just sacred. I literally feel like we've gotten to touch a little tender place inside of you and feel what you're feeling.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so grateful that I got to talk to you. And I think it's just amazing that you're doing this. I'm a big fan of your podcast and I listen to it on my dog walks all the time. I particularly like this idea of just hearing people's stories because I think it's really powerful. It's touching. And I think there's a lot of things that are just part of the human experience that people can connect with. I'm really grateful that you have provided the opportunity for people to do that and hear those stories.
And it's just so much fun. It fulfills my need for connection and contribution.
Yeah.
Well, thank
Thank
you, Lisa.
you.
Have a great day, and we will talk soon. Thank you, Lisa, for spending this time with us and for sharing with us the intimate details of your life and your relationship with yoga. I felt emotional a few times during this episode, this interview. I'm not sure why. It will definitely be something that I need to reflect on, from cancer journey to relationship with mother. There were so many tender points, going to college and not having a place to feel grounded, maybe kids going to college, the empty nest syndrome. Just so many points, especially a woman's life. And how important it is to have that long-term relationship with self through the practice of yoga. And, it could be a long-term relationship with Buddhist meditation. I think for some of you, it's a relationship with some sport or running, maybe even a relationship with God or the church. I think we all find these places in life, these golden threads, if you will, that take us through the phases of our life. I feel like the people that I know that have felt lost in life and hopeless and lonely and wondering, why am I here? Who am I? Why do I have to suffer like this? I feel like I'm not sure if they've been able to find those golden threads that have supported them and nourished them throughout all the challenges of being human. And I think there's many ways to find those golden threads. It doesn't have to be yoga, but I think if you know anyone, if you love anyone that hasn't found their golden threads that are helping them through this life as a human who suffers, maybe see if you could help them find that thing that they can always come home to and be with, come back to at all the different stages and phases of life to come home to self. So thank you, Lisa, for kind of giving us a model of that. And I'm just really grateful that you were willing to share the story you did today. All right, everyone, have a great week, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you to our guest today. And as we complete the podcast, I just want to remind you that we have Monday night clinics where we have an entire community come together to do gentle postures, breath work, and yoga nidra meditation every Monday night. We have a theme for the month. And all through 2025, we have all of our themes mapped out. You can go to www.theoptimalstate.com and look on the top menu bar where it says the Monday Night Clinic. We invite you to come and be part of our community on Monday nights. All right, I hope to see you there. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.